he nodded, scribbled a note, and gave me a sad smile before departing. Bowden looked at me with interest. He would have guessed eventually that I was ex-military. I wore it badly. Crimea veteran, eh? Did you know Colonel Phelps was in town? I bumped into him on the airship yesterday. He wanted me to go to one of his rallies. Will you? You must be kidding. His idea of the perfect end to the Crimean conflict is for us to fight and fight until there is no one left alive, and the peninsulas are poisoned and mined land no good for anything. I'm hoping that the UN can bring both governments to their senses.
I was called up in 78, said Bowden. Even got past basic training. Fortunately, it was the same year the Tsar died and the Crown Prince took over. There were more pressing demands on the young Emperor's time, so the Russians withdrew. I was never needed.
I was reading somewhere that since the war started, only 7 years of the 131 have actually been spent fighting.
But when they do, added Bowden, they certainly make up for it.
I looked at him. He had taken a sip of water after offering the carafe to me first.
Married? Kids?
No, replied Bowden. I haven't really had time to find myself a wife, although I am not against the idea in principle. It's just that Spec Ops is not really a great place for meeting people, and I'm not, I confess, a great socializer. I've been shortlisted for a post opening the equivalent of a Literatech office in Ohio. It seems to me the perfect opportunity to take a wife.
The money's good over there, and the facilities are excellent. I'd consider it myself given the opportunity, I replied. I meant it, too.
Would you? Would you really?
Asked Bowden, with a flush of excitement that was curiously at odds with his slightly cold demeanour.
Sure, change of scenery, I stammered, wanting to change the subject in case Bowden got the wrong idea.
Have you, been a Literatech long?
Bowden thought for a moment.
10 years. I came from Cambridge with a degree in 19th-century literature and joined the Literatech straight away. Jim Cromarty looked after me from the moment I started.
He stared out of the window wistfully.
Perhaps if I'd been there...
Then you'd both be dead. Anyone who shoots a man 6 times in the face doesn't go to Sunday school. He'd have killed you and not even thought about it. There's little to be gained in what-ifs, believe me, I know. I lost 2 fellow officers to Hades. I've been over it all 100 times, yet it would probably happen exactly the same way if I had another chance. Lottie placed the soup in front of us with a basket of freshly baked bread.
Enjoy, said Lottie. It's on the house.
But, I began.
Lottie silenced me. Save your breath, she said impassively. After the charge, after the shit hit the fan, after the first wave of death, you went back to do what you could. You went back. I value that.
She turned and left.
The soup was good. The rojes comino, even better. Victor told me you worked on Shakespeare up in London, said Bowden. It was the most prestigious area in which to work in the Literatech office. Lake poetry was a close second, and Restoration comedy after that. Even in the most egalitarian of offices, a pecking order always established itself.
There was very little room for promotion in the London office, so after a couple of years I was given the Shakespeare work, I replied, tearing at a piece of bread. We get a lot of trouble from Baconians in London.
Bowden looked up. How do you rate the Baconian theory?
Not much. Like many people, I'm pretty sure there is more to Shakespeare than just Shakespeare, but Sir Francis Bacon using a little-known actor as a front, I just don't buy it.
He was a trained lawyer, asserted Bowden. Many of the plays have legal parlance to them.
It means nothing, I replied. Green, Nash, and especially Ben Jonson use legal phraseology. None of them had legal training. And don't even get me started on the so-called codes.
No need to worry about that, replied Bowden. I won't. I'm no Baconian either. He didn't write them.
And what would make you so sure?
If you read his De Argumentis Scientiarum, you'll find Bacon actually criticising popular drama. Furthermore, when the troupe Shakespeare belonged to applied to the king to form a theatre, they were referred to the commissioner for suits. Guess who was on that panel and most vociferously opposed the application?
Francis Bacon? I asked.
Exactly. Whoever wrote the plays, it wasn't Bacon. I formulated a few theories of my own over the years. Have you ever heard of Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford?
Vaguely.
There is some proof that, unlike Bacon, he could actually write, and write quite well. Hang on.
Lottie had brought a phone to the table. It was for Bowden. He wiped his mouth with a napkin.
Yes?
He looked up at me.
Yes, she is. We'll be right over. Thanks.
Problems?
It's your aunt and uncle. I don't know how to say this, but they've been kidnapped.
There were several police and spec ops cars clustered around the entrance to my mother's house when we pulled up. A small crowd had assembled and was peering over the fence. The dodos had gathered on the other side and were staring back, wondering what the fuss was all about. I showed my badge to the officer on duty.
"Litteratech?" he said scornfully. "Can't let you in, ma'am. Police and Spec Ops 9 only."
"He's my uncle," I said angrily, and the officer reluctantly let me through. Swindon was the same as London. A Litteratech's badge held about as much authority as a bus pass. I found my mother in the living room, surrounded by damp Kleenex. I sat beside her and asked her what had happened. She blew her nose noisily.
"I called them in for dinner at 1. It was Snorkers, Mycroft's favourite. There was no answer, so I went down to his workshop. They were both gone, and the double doors wide open. Mycroft wouldn't have gone out without saying anything."
This was true. Mycroft never left the house unless it was absolutely necessary. Since Owens had been harangued, Polly did all his running around.
"Anything stolen?"
I asked a Spec Ops 9 operative, who stared at me coldly. He didn't relish being asked questions by a Litteratech.
"Who knows?"
he replied with little emotion.
"I understand you'd been in his workshop recently?"
"Yesterday evening."
"Then perhaps you can have a look round and tell us if there's anything missing."
I was escorted to Mycroft's workshop. The rear doors had been forced, and I looked around carefully. The table where Mycroft had kept all his bookworms had been cleared. All I could see was the massive two-pronged power lead that would have slotted into the back of the prose portal.
"There was something right here. Several goldfish bowls full up with small worms, and a large book a bit like a medieval church Bible."
"Can you draw it?"
asked a familiar voice. I turned to see Jack Shit lurking in the shadows, smoking a small cigarette and overseeing a Goliath technician who was passing a humming sensor over the ground.
"Well, well," I said, "if it isn't Jack Shit, what's Goliath's interest in my uncle?"
"Can you draw it?" he repeated.
I nodded, and one of the Goliath men gave me a pencil and paper. I sketched out what I had seen, the intricate combination of dials and knobs on the front of the book and the heavy brass straps. Jack Shit took it from me and studied it with great interest as another Goliath technician walked in from outside.
"Well?"
asked Shit. The agent saluted neatly and showed Shit a pair of large and slightly molten G-clamps.
"Professor Next had jury-rigged his own set of cables to the electrical substation just next door. I spoke to the electricity board. They said they had 3 unexplained power drains of about 1.8 megawatts each late last night."
Jack Shit turned to me.
"You'd better leave this to us, Next," he said. "Kidnapping and theft are not part of the Litteratech's responsibility."
"Who did this?" I demanded. But Shit didn't take crap from anyone, least of all me. He wagged a finger in my direction.
"This investigation is nothing to do with you. We'll keep you informed of any developments, or not, as I see fit."
He turned and walked away.
"It was Acheron, wasn't it?"
I said, slowly and deliberately. Shit stopped in mid-stride and turned to face me.
"Acheron is dead, Next. Burned to crisp at Junction 12. Don't spread your theories around town, girl. It might make you seem more unstable than you actually are."
He smiled without the least vestige of kindness and walked out of the workshop to his waiting car. Chapter 15. Hello and Goodbye, Mr. Quaverley. Few people remember Mr. Quaverley any more. If you had read Martin Chuzzlewit prior to 1985, you would have come across a minor character who lived in Mrs. Todger's boarding house. He discoursed freely with the Pecksniffs on the subject of butterflies, of which he knew almost nothing. Sadly, he is no longer there. His hat is hanging on the hat rack at the bottom of page 235, but that is all that remains. Mill on the Floss, Thursday next casebook, Volume 6.
"Astounding," said Acheron quietly, as he surveyed Mycroft's prose portal. "Truly astounding."
Mycroft said nothing. He had been too busy wondering whether Polly was still alive and well since the poem closed on her. Against his protestations, they had pulled the plug before the portal had reopened. He didn't know if any human could survive in such an environment. They had blindfolded him during the journey, and he was now standing in the smoking lounge of what had once been a large and luxurious hotel. Although still grand, the decor was tatty and worn. The pearl-inlaid grand piano didn't look as though it had been tuned for years, and the mirror-backed bar was sadly devoid of any refreshment. Mycroft looked out of the window for a clue as to where he was being held. It wasn't hard to guess. The large quantity of drab-coloured Griffin motor cars, and the absence of any advertising hoardings, told Mycroft all he needed to know. He was in the People's Republic of Wales, somewhere well out of reach of the conventional law enforcement agencies. The possibility of escape was slim, and if he could get away, what then? Even if there was a chance he could make it back across the border, he would never be able to leave without Polly. She was still imprisoned in the poem, itself now little more than printed words on a scrap of paper that Hades had placed in his breast pocket. There seemed to be little chance of regaining the poem without a fearsome struggle, and besides, without the bookworms and the prose portal, Polly would stay in her Wordsworthian prison forever. Mycroft bit his lip nervously, and turned his attention to the other people in the room. Besides himself and Hades, there were four others, and two of them held guns.
"Welcome, Professor Next," said Hades, as he grinned broadly. "From one genius to another."
He gazed fondly at the machine. He ran a finger along the rim of one of the goldfish bowls. The worms were busy reading a copy of Mansfield Park, and were discussing where Sir Thomas got his money from.
"I can't do this alone, you know," said Hades, without looking up.
One of the other men shuffled to get more comfortable on one of the few original upholstered armchairs.
"The next step for me is to gain your full support."
He looked at Mycroft with a serious expression.
"You will help me, won't you?"
"I would sooner die," replied Mycroft coldly.
Acheron looked at him, then broke into another broad grin.
"I don't doubt it for one moment, but I'm being rude. I have abducted you and stolen your life's work, and haven't even introduced myself."
He walked up to Mycroft and shook him warmly by the hand, a gesture that Mycroft didn't return.
"My name is Hades, Acheron Hades. Perhaps you've heard of me."
"Acheron the extortionist?" asked Mycroft slowly. "Acheron the kidnapper and the blackmailer?"
Acheron's smile didn't leave his lips.
"Yes, yes, and yes. But you forgot murderer. 42 times a murderer, my friend. The first one is always the hardest. After that, it doesn't really matter. They can only hang you once. It's a bit like eating a packet of shortbread. You can never just have one piece."
He laughed again.
"I had a run-in with your niece, you know. She survived, although," he added, in case Mycroft erroneously believed there was a vestige of goodness in his dark soul, "that wasn't the way I had planned it."
"Why are you doing this?" asked Mycroft.
"Why?" repeated Acheron. "Why? Why, for fame, of course," he boomed. "You see, gentlemen,
The others nodded.